The first thing, the foundations of having a coaching conversation is to be genuinely curious. It's a lot of coaches with the title of coaches get coaching confused with teaching or coaching confused with just telling them what to do, basically, is a maybe another way to say it. So you need to be genuinely curious. In order to be genuinely curious, you have to genuinely care. So you have to be. You don't just have to be an expert in what you're coaching. You do. That is obviously extremely important, but you need to genuinely care about people. You're trying to affect, positively influence somebody's life.
Welcome to Small Business Talk for Coaches with Kathy Smith. This podcast is the ultimate resource for coaches looking to transform their coaching passion into a thriving business. Kathy Smith began a journey as a marketing professional in 2001 and has helped thousands of businesses to grow. Kathy specializes in helping coaches and is dedicated to showing you how to get your first clients and then many more. If you are ready to take your coaching practice to the next level, then you are in the right place. Whether you are just starting your coaching journey or you're an experienced coach not seeing the results you desire, then this podcast is for you.
Welcome to Small Business Talk for Coaches, episode 235. Today, my special guest is Zach Carlin. Zach has been a coach for over 17 years, so we were just talking off screen about what we were going to talk about. So I think we're just going to have a conversation, how to have a coaching conversation. Welcome, Zach.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. All the way from Arkansas, United States. So I appreciate it.
Fantastic. So just down the road for some of our listeners and a long way away for others. So Zach, can you give us the 30-second introduction of how you got into coaching and what you do now?
Absolutely. So I started out in my coaching career in fitness right when I finished high school. I got right into, that was my first official certification, I guess, was personal training. Found out that being a personal trainer was a lot more of being a therapist than anything else. So I got, I grew up in a very small town, so I had to kind of diversify more my, my portfolio, I guess you could say, because the clients weren't as abundant. So I also had a job, got a job at a recreation facility where I was doing addictions counseling. So I got a lot of experience working with very different, individuals, having to overcome very unique, and challenging, clients, and goals of the client. So it was, I had a very quickly had a very diverse background. And then from there, I owned about six fitness, small boutique fitness facilities where I was doing both fitness, health and nutrition, and life coaching out of there. And again, I was about six facilities that I owned, and then I flipped, ended up flipping. And then I got into leadership coaching, business coaching, and sales coaching as well. Everything coaching, like that's why we're kind of having trouble deciding, well, what do we want to focus on when it comes to coaching? I've kind of, I don't want to say I haven't done it all. That wouldn't be a fair representation, but coaching is the essence of it stays the same regardless of the topic, regardless of the discipline. So I've had a lot of experience with coaching over the last 18 years, and now we're putting it all together with our company called Summit Chasers. You were on our podcast, the Summit Chasers podcast, as well. So we're working with, now we work with small businesses to try to help them create the life that they want to live and run the business that they want to run.
Fantastic. So it's all around conversations. So where do you think we should start this conversation?
I think we should start with how to have a coaching conversation. That's probably a good place to start.
Perfect. So do you have some tips for the listeners on how to have a coaching conversation?
The first thing, the foundations of having a coaching conversation is to be genuinely curious. It's a lot of coaches with the title of coaches get coaching confused with teaching or coaching confused with just telling them what to do, basically, is a maybe another way to say it. So you need to be genuinely curious. In order to be genuinely curious, you have to genuinely care. So you have to be, you don't just have to be an expert in what you're coaching. You do. That is obviously extremely important, but you need to genuinely care about people. You're trying to affect, positively influence somebody's life. So whether you're in fitness, sales, business, you have the ability to have a profound positive or negative effect on somebody's life. And you have to genuinely care about that. That has to be on your mind all the time. And so in order to have an effective conversation, you have to care. And in order, you have to be very, very curious. But I believe you can't have the genuine curiosity without genuinely caring first. So I think that's the basis. That's the foundation of having a coaching conversation, I think.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting that the term coach covers so many different disciplines. And as you say, it could be an advisor, could be a consultant, could be a mentor, could be just somebody selling a product and not having any better term for it. So they call themselves a coach. So when you're really thinking about coaching, do you think it's more about the questions or the listening?
Both. So there's a term, and it says you have to listen in the third person or have a communication in the third person. So first person would be me paying attention to how I'm talking to you. So I'm paying attention to the words that I'm saying to you, right? So if I'm communicating and I'm only focusing on the words that I'm saying, I'm only making sense to myself. I'm only getting across to myself. I'm only communicating for myself. I'm not communicating for you, right? And if I communicate in the second person, I'm only worried about what they're thinking. I'm only worried about how they're reacting to what I'm saying. So I'm not focusing on what I'm saying. But if I'm communicating in the third person, I'm focusing on what I'm doing. I'm focusing on how I'm reacting to what they're saying. I'm focusing on how what I'm communicating is affecting them. And then I'm also paying attention to how they're communicating to me. Right. So I need to see thumbs up. I'm on to something. But you have to be able to communicate in that third person. Right. So you have to be listening, paying attention to visually as well what they're saying. So that's why it's really good, you know, Zoom is really good to have these coaching conversations. It's really difficult over the phone. You can do it. You can listen to tone and that kind of thing, how they pause, but it's, you have to have both at the same time. You have to. And there's a fun exercise I do with some of my leadership and business clients where I have them sit with, whether it's us if we're doing the exercise, or they sit with one of their direct reports, and they just have to sit there and talk about things that they see. So I just saw that you just blinked. And as I'm saying, you just nodded. So you understood what I'm saying. Therefore, what I'm saying must be resonating. And now you're smiling. So you're starting to get what I'm saying right now. So I'm saying, I'm trying to pay attention to both how you're reacting to what I'm saying and what I'm doing in reaction to how you're reacting to what I'm saying, if that made sense. So you have to be in that third person. You have to be able to see it from both sides.
And I think that's a really good thing to do, because quite often when we're not in that coaching conversation, we are just waiting for our turn. And coaches do it all the time. They talk over the top of each other. And when they're not in a coaching conversation, they're not actually listening to the other person. So being very aware of not only what you were doing, but what the other person is doing is absolutely imperative. And if you are doing that, then that curiosity normal will just bubble to the top. So, and it was interesting, your thumbs up. So for the people that are listening to the audio version only, up on the screen popped a thumbs up, and that was what we were laughing at.
Yeah, and it's we have to understand that we communicate 100% of the time. Like even when I'm sitting here not saying words, you can see my top half at least, right? I'm communicating in some sort of way, even though I'm not verbally, auditorily communicating. Right. Like the way I'm nodding, the way, you know, my eyebrows raised, the way I sit. So if you see somebody, you know, shrink a little bit, you know, like, okay, either I'm losing them or their confidence is leaving or whatever that is, you have to understand that you're always communicating. So if you're, and then that affects people. If you are coaching somebody who they have, you know, self-esteem issues, they have self-confidence issues, like that, every little thing that you do, like they're almost over exaggerate it in their head a little bit. Not always, but that is a big thing when they have self-esteem issues, because they're always thinking like, oh, I just said something. Did that was that like the wrong thing to say, or was it wrong, or am I in trouble? Right. So it's things like that. So you have to be very aware of how what you do, even if it's not just the words you say, affects the other person.
Yes. And I think that's something that sometimes we do miss. is we're just very concentrating on saying the words. But it's interesting how words mean different things to different people as well. We all know that with our names, particularly people like us that have shortened versions of our longer names. If somebody calls you by your full name, that's a quite different reaction to...
I'm in trouble.
And you've just pulled a good face on that, Zach. That's quite a different reaction to if we are called by our shortened preferred names. So we need to be careful about the words we use too, because some people have different connotations about those exact words. So when we're saying something, it doesn't always come across the way we've intended it to.
No, absolutely. And then tone matters. Absolutely. It's just not the words that we say. The words we say are only about 30% of communication. And then there's a huge chunk of it that's tone. And then there's a huge chunk of it that's physical. Right. So then there's kind of the kinetic, you know, the kids these days call it the vibe that you can feel. I know my partner's probably laughing somewhere that I said that word, but it's really the words that we say. Again, it's a very small portion of how we communicate, but then how we say it. Like you said, when she says Zach, I know we're probably fine. But if she says Zachary, I stand at attention. I'm like, well, what did I do? Right. So it's very different. And then, but then she could say it in a different tone and then it means something completely different. Right. So it's so important. And that, like, if you're a coach, like doing as much coaching like this as you can and trying to stay off as much like email communication, Slack communication, or if you're using an app, if you have a proprietary app or something like that, try to have as much of this type of communication as you can, especially if you have, it depends how your coaching is set up, how your program's set up. If you have higher ticket levels of your coaching, and then obviously there's going to be some that are on Slack and, you know, they only get like one phone call a month or something like that. But to be able to put as much of this as you can, like whether, even if it's in a group, get them in a group. Like if you only have a certain amount of one-on-one clients, that maybe you have one-on-ones once a week or bi-weekly or something like that, and then you have a bigger group who maybe have a lower tier, do something in a group, right? So at least they're hearing your tone, so then they can equate your tone and how you use your words, what your words mean to you and what your words mean to them. They can equate that more effectively into an email, and then your communication is just a lot smoother. So, and that's why, like, content, like authentic content's important too, because you're communicating through your content. So then that'll come across more in your emails, in your Slacks and your text messages, whatever you're using, more often as well.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why video is so important, so that we can see the people that we're communicating with and we can feel like we're feeling them, touching them, and making a difference to how they sound, they look. And that can be a total turnoff for some of your people. And that's probably a good thing too, because you don't want your whole ecosystem filled with people that aren't your raving fans.
No, absolutely not. And that's a great point. And then if you go into like the business of coaching, like we try to cater. That's a big downfall, is we try to cater to those people that just aren't a good fit. They don't want what you have, and they don't want who you are. Right. So, and you can't to try to cater to those people, then you're going to turn off the people who you have a connection with. And those are the people that you can help the most.
Yes.
So if you shy away from them, I mean, you're negating so much of the positive effects that you can have to your community and to your clients when you do cater to those people. So being authentic and how you communicate, how you want to communicate, how you find best to connect to your clients, just stick with that. Don't just because, oh, I could open up another revenue stream if I have a whole bunch of people where I only talk to over Slack. It's like, well, that's going to take your time away from this, and you're probably charging lower ticket, and it's just not authentic, and it's not going to be long term.
No. And then you end up spread so thin that you become vanilla to everybody, and suddenly you've got no real offering, because you're just trying to do what you see other people do. And quite often you see those other people getting a lot of slack for the fact that they're not doing what they're teaching. But of course they're not, because they're not at that level. So you see people that have got huge, big social media followings, but they didn't start that way. So if you're not at that level, don't try to spread yourself too thin.
No, because it's that age-old adage, right? If you try to do everything, you'll be good at nothing. Oh, you'll do nothing well, right? If you're just starting out, you have to find your own proprietary voice. Like, what is that? how can I, or how can Kathy most authentically, positively affect, right, the most amount of people? And sometimes that's not by, especially at the beginning, throwing out, you know, a challenge for 10,000 people into an app, and you know they charge, you charge $10 a week or $10 a month or something like that, whatever it is. If that's not you and that's not something that you can authentically do long term over time, then don't do it until you have the infrastructure to do it. And that takes time. That takes time. I've been I had a company called VShred, and it ended up becoming very, very large. But when we started, we tried to prematurely really push out our online offerings, where we just had people come in, they'd fill out a form, and we'd throw them some workouts and some nutrition plans just based on a form that they filled out. And it was so difficult because the content that was already out, the reviews that were already out, the referrals that we were getting, it was very much around much more personal touch. It was very much more around you get a one-on-one coaching experience with video and group videos, and you got a community support. And then when we poured in this lesser offer, it was much less money as well, but people don't really care about that. It was perceived as so much less valuable and so much less authentic that it took a long time to get that going. And if we didn't have such a big, a big infrastructure that we could afford to kind of take those hits, it would have been a disaster. And in my books now, my standards I have now, it was a disaster because we did it very abruptly. But we weren't authentic. Again, we weren't authentic. There was a front man who decided he was just going to, I'm just going to do the videos now. I'm just going to be the good looking guy who does all the YouTube videos. That wasn't me, by the way. And we'll hire a bunch of people to do this. And it just didn't hit because it wasn't authentic. It wasn't on brand. It wasn't as promised. So.
And that's the thing, the digital disconnect is such a big thing. And that's a perfect example of paying for something and getting delivered something completely different. So particularly in coaching, that's not what people are looking for. They are looking for authentically you. And we all know that we've seen those photos in LinkedIn, and then you meet the person in real life and you go, oh, is that actually the same person? So making sure that that digital disconnect doesn't happen is the way that you will actually build a robust business.
That sounds like my dating life before I met my fiance. if that's what you want to do, then, and this might upset some people, then you're not a coach. No. Like if you just want to just throw out a course, or you want to just, you know, throw out a plan to whatever you're coaching, right? Just throw out a plan to somebody that isn't, you know, you say it's custom, but it's really just a little tweaked version of somebody else's program, then you're not a coach. You just have a course, which is fine. I mean, if that's what you want to do, then that's fine, but you're not a coach, right? If you're a coach, you're committed to change people's lives one-on-one or one too few in it. And that's where it's tough. And I think that we brought this up when you were on my podcast, when the word coach gets thrown around almost too whimsically. Now, I think that's how you say that. And which is unfortunate, because coaching is so important. Like, whether you're a mentor, you're, you know, a teacher, you're a boss, coaching is a part of all of that, right? You're promising somebody that you can guide them to the goals that they want to achieve, or at least get a lot closer. You might not take them all the way, but you can get them to where, you know, they can maybe move on to somebody else as a mentor or a coach. But it's just such an important piece that we're missing, that's needed today. If we want a lot of these, you know, kids coming up or young adults that we want, you know, speaking to my clients, we want to increase, or we want to help 100,000 business owners create the life that they want. I'm not going to be able to do that by throwing out a course. I'm going to have to put together a framework, a coaching framework or a mentor framework, right? We call it a partnership. And call it what you want. There's still coaching involved. And then I'm gonna have to coach people how to do that in order to replicate myself. I can't just throw out a course, right? But that is coaching, is guiding people to the outcome that they want. And it's not telling them what to do either. A lot of people come to you and they already have all the tools. They have all the knowledge. They just need a guide and know how to use those tools and knowledge and maybe use some of your experiences and a third party view to be able to see things a little bit differently and guide them to the end result that they want. And so if that's not what you're doing, then you're not a coach, which is fine. That's just not what you want to do. I'm not saying there's wrong with it. Just don't call yourself a coach.
Yes. And I think that's where it gets a bit murky, is that there's so many different disciplines that are calling themselves coaches. And a lot of what they do may be coaching, but if they're moving towards more mentoring or facilitating, then yeah, you use the correct term, because it can be misleading. Because you get people that do courses and they've been given exactly the same material, and some people do really, really well, and other people, it's just a waste of money. And they've gone in and they've done the stuff, but the difference is that they've got in their own way, and they potentially haven't put their hand up for that coaching. They haven't asked for that extra bit, because we all know that confronting questions can be confronting. So we sometimes don't want to do that. So that's where that real coaching can come into play, and having that third person just look from the outside and go, hey, Zach, did you think about this? Or what do you really mean with that? Or do you need that accountability?
Yeah. We could have 10 people look at the same map to try to get to the X, and we'll have 10 different people getting lost 10 different ways, right? So it's our job to take that map and make it make sense for them to get to the X, to get to their end result, right? It's not like we're not writing the map for them, right? The map's already there a lot of times, but we help them make sense of it. And it's the same with like data. Like if we're talking to businesses, like they can look at data sets. So they can look at all the, you know, fancy, you know, the shiny object syndrome these days. They don't know what to pick, right? They're all looking at the same thing, but they all come up to, you know, a million different types of conclusions, or they read it in a different way, or their experiences, or maybe they had a negative experience in their past that stops them from just from getting that, just that one extra little, you know, little outlook, or just getting themselves out of their way. Just kind of breaking down that wall, really, so they can see what's on the other side a little bit more clearly. And like that's what coaches do.
Yes.
And that's exactly. And I think it's just very important. I think there needs to be more good coaches out there helping those people achieve what they want to achieve.
Absolutely. And sometimes it can be just that one question, or it can be an observation. Sometimes it doesn't even have to be a question. It's, oh, did you realize you're doing this? Or why do you do that particular way? And quite often it's because we've always done it that way. That's the way the business does it, all of that sort of thing. And then you get somebody come in and shake it up, and people don't like change. So they're wondering, is it them that there's an issue? Is it the system that's an issue? And having those pure coaching conversations can really help to smooth that and show them that they're fine. They're not broken. They're good. It's just something different they need to do now.
Yeah. The answer most of the time is in there. They just need to see it in a different way. And that's like a third party perspective. It's so valuable. So valuable, especially when you get, we were talking about fitness, especially when you get somebody who they've done things the same way for 10 years, and that's why they are where they are, but they don't see a problem with it. Cause like I'm fine. It's been 10 years and I'm not dead yet. Well, that's not the case. You know that you do this and that can cause this, which can cause this, or a business owner who's nonstop in their day to day where they can't even see what's really going on around them, and just, okay, let's pull you out of here. Imagine if we did things this way. Have you ever thought of that before? And they're like, not like that. It completely can change everything. It can change everything for them. And as we're saying it, you know, we make it sound simple, but being a good coach, it's hard. It's hard to do. It's not that it's hard to do. It takes consistency and it takes time. And the best coaches are students first. They're always learning. They're always trying to improve. They stay curious, not just with their clients, they stay curious in everything. Like I've read those books. It's not just there. Those are real. Exactly. There's a thumbs up again for those of you that are listening. You have to stay a student. Like the best masters are students first, right? So you have to always be practicing your craft. Even in sales is a form of coaching. You're getting people out of their own way and realizing that they need what you have, right? That what you have can solve their problems genuinely. There's some sneaky sales tactics out there, but it's a form of coaching. And it's just, again, you have to, it's difficult to be a good coach. Like, so just knowing that and just always practicing, practice having those conversations. And like, we, for our team, like we have that, the little exercise that I did with you earlier. Like, we do that. We practice being in that third person, right? So how, what is what I'm doing affecting what you're doing? And we kind of do those back and forth to practice that. And it's because it's not, you can't script it.
No.
Like you can practice a few things, like explaining, you know, if we have a certain framework or something that we teach, okay, you have to practice that stuff. But how you communicate it, how you can get it across, how you can make it make sense for them, how you can make it usable and actionable for them, that takes practice. Because that's, you can have 100 different people and you'd have to communicate it 100 different ways. And it could mean 100 different things to them. So it takes a lot of practice. You have to always be a student.
Yes, most definitely. And quite often it is simple, but it's not easy. And I think that's the difference. Is it can be just literally step after step and only a few steps, but those steps are huge if you haven't got them broken down. So sometimes it's a case of having to break it down. And interestingly, how you said that having a script doesn't always work. And that's why we don't have sales scripts anymore, mm-hmm. because you can just see through them. You know what they're going to do. You know that they're not authentic. And when somebody's learnt that so well, they forget all the other things that they have a person in front of them and they need to actually be catering for that person. And it's not a one size fits all.
No, I have nothing to add to that. It's absolutely, absolutely true. And then that's, when we come in first full circle, you have to genuinely care about people. You have to genuinely care about getting people the result that you want. And that's why, like, especially with coaching businesses, and it's important in any other business too, but I think in coaching businesses, it's so important to have like a clear mission and purpose. Like, what do I want to accomplish? What kind of difference do I want to make? Like, again, for us is, you know, we want the success of small businesses to be an expectation, not an anomaly. And we want to positively infect 100,000 business owners. That keeps me fired up. That makes me want to learn more. That makes me want to do more content. That makes me want to talk to great people like you. But to have that clear purpose of, this is the difference I'm trying to make. These are the type of people I want to change, or I would not change, but I want to help achieve what they want to achieve. It'd be very clear with that, and then have it, don't just write it everywhere, like live and breathe it, right? Follow through with it, be authentic with it, right? You have to be very clear.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's where we quite often go wrong as a coach and a business owner, because we forget that we need to be looking after ourselves as well. We spend all our time working in the business and we're not working on the business. So we're not looking at our missions. We're not looking at those things that lit us up in the first place to create this business. And now we're just working way too many hours and things start to slide. So that's why we all need our own coaches as well.
Ah, yes. Coaches need coaches. Like I said, coaches need to be an apprentice first, a student first. In order to be a student, you have to have a teacher. You know, I've always believed in the biggest investment, the best investment that you can make, the biggest return on an investment that you can make is on yourself.
Indeed.
It's always going to be, whether it's on your health, your mental fitness, you know, you're taking your vitamins, getting exercise, you know, doing the hot and cold stuff. That's crazy these days, right? Which it works. I get it. But that's all so important. And when we're running a business, we forget. We think that going over my P&L with my managers is the most important thing, or no, putting out 80 pieces of content on a Sunday is the most important thing. Well, no, the most important thing is go get some fresh air, exercise, be healthy, be cognitively functioning at your, you know, the highest performance that you can, so that the content that you do put out is extremely good. And when you are working with your clients, you're getting great results from them. When you do read the book, you're retaining a lot of it and you have actionable takeaways that you can use in the book. That's more important. Quality over quantity will always win. Like, there's a saying where quality will always beat quantity, but in order to get quality, you need to do quantity first, right? So but a lot of people just keep doing the quantity. They just want to keep doing the same thing over and over again, right? Like that goes back to even, this is a mistake that I made. I made many mistakes. That's one example of this, that I've made, mistake like this I've made is reading books. I made a I made a goal back in 2022, I believe. I wanted to read a book a week for the whole year.
Yeah.
And I did it, but I maybe retained like information from 10 of them, right? I wasn't intentional with it. I was just doing it. It was like a vanity metric. We get so stuck in the vanity metrics. And I think that's something that we brought up when we were talking too, is we almost glorify, like, I worked 100 hours this week. I'm grinding. I haven't slept in 4 days. And that's almost glorified. It's like, that's terrible. It sounds like you will not keep this up and things are going to blow up in a week. Like, it's not good. So I shifted from, you know, reading a book a week to, I'm going to pick 5 books in a subject that I want to master, and I'm going to study those until I feel like I can teach it. That's more effective than reading 50.
Absolutely.
You have to find that balance. Yeah. Right. But taking care of yourself and being able to put out more quality, that's always going to supersede quantity for the sake of quantity.
Absolutely. And Sunday for most people should be family time and should be that downtime. And if we don't take a break, then our brains can't recharge and they can't come up with those fantastic ideas. That's why quite often small business owners are awake at 2 o'clock in the morning, because it's the only time that their brains actually switch down enough to be now percolating those ideas. So we do need to make sure that we do have a balance between working and downtime so that we can create those creative ideas and come up with the new next best thing.
Well, and even if those of you that are listening think that is silly, Bill Gates, 3 times a year, would take a week. And I can't remember, he had a name for them, but he would go and do nothing, just be him in a notebook and some books. And he would just get to a spot where he was not stressed. When you're stressed, you can't be creative. It's very difficult for us to be creative. When we're stressed, like we were monkeys not that long ago, our stress response is biologically built when we're running away from something that's trying to eat us. So we can make quick, short-sighted decisions under stress. And it feeds a lot more energy to our lungs and our legs. Well, when we're stressed nowadays, we're not running away from anything other than our feelings or whatever, if we have investors or whatever it is, right? We're running away from them. So we're just always in this fight or flight, and it's really hard for us to be creative, and it's hard for us to make good long-term decisions. We're making more short-sighted decisions. We're more reactive than proactive. So if you can put yourself in that state where your stress levels are lower, you can be much more creative, much more creative. You can see things a lot more clearer. You communicate better. You communicate more clearly. And so you need to take that time. And like I said, if Bill Gates does it, and I hear he was fairly successful, think of him what you will, but I hear he's pretty successful. So take that time. And whether that looks like, you know, once a week, we have a river. Well, we have a lot of rivers around here, but once a week we'll go over to a river with the dogs, and I'll read a book by the river, or I'll do a video by the river, and we just hang out. And that's what we do. And that's just no stress, and we can be creative.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's amazing the things that you will think of when you're out walking the dog, be it the river, the mountains, the beach, that sort of thing. When you're not got your ears in, you're not filling your brain up with things, and you're just letting nature be and the ideas come. They're always the best ones.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason that we have, a lot of people will say, like, shower thoughts. Like when we come up with ideas in the shower, it's because the warm water and the static noise, which is of the shower running, it relaxes us so we can be more creative. So that's a real thing. It's a biological effect on us that when we're in the shower, we tend to relax. If we're not in a hurry to do something, right? If we're just in there, warm water, it allows us to think more clearly and be more creative. So you get, it's why a lot of people say the shower thoughts. It's because you're relaxed.
Well, there you go. I've not heard that expression before, so it makes a lot of sense.
There you go.
So this has been a great conversation, Zach. Is there anything that we should have said that you don't think we have?
I don't think so. It was an amazing conversation. I hope a lot of people got a lot out of it, especially the coaches and business owners out there, to take the time for themselves and to be authentic with your clients, how you want to make your positive influence on the world, how you want to change the world in your, or just maybe you don't have to change the world. You just want to change the people that are in your community and in your network, to be really, really clear in how you want to do that and be authentic with it. But no, I mean, maybe we'll have a part two and we'll cover some more. There's lots more to do with the business of coaching that would be a lot of fun to talk about, but I think this has been a great conversation.
Fantastic. So at this time of the podcast, I get to ask you 5 questions. So are you game?
Oh, yeah. I'm a little nervous, but yeah. All right. Let's go.
Everybody says that. I'm not quite sure why. Promise they're not too hard. What is the best advice given to you by a mentor?
Oh, that is a good one. Best advice given to me by a mentor. Okay. So I had... This was a long time ago, but he told me to, I'll never get out of my own way if I don't take responsibility for everything, and to do it intentionally. So that was when you get into that, like the victimhood mindset or victim mindset, you tend to, it's everybody else's fault. It's the dog's fault. It's my mom's fault. It's my boss's fault. It's everybody's fault. It's the red light's fault. But if you intentionally take responsibility for everything, you're admitting that you can change the outcome. You're admitting that you can improve. You're admitting that there's something like a better outcome could have come from that, and it will in the future. But if you don't take responsibility for everything and put blame, you're admitting that there's nothing that you could do, that you're as good as you're going to be. And there's nothing that you could do to change the outcome. So that was probably the best advice that I've always come back to over the years that a mentor has given to me. And it was from like an old boxing coach too. It wasn't like a Mr. Miyagi kind of guy either. It was just, yeah.
Well, maybe he was. Maybe he was actually your Mr. Miyagi. So there you go.
Maybe.
What is the biggest help that you have received since starting your business?
Biggest help I've received. These are good questions. Biggest help I've received. Ooh. Biggest help probably. So I think it's really opening up. I had somebody who I had, it was actually from a client, the biggest help I've had since starting the business from a client where they, when you're starting a coaching business, and you start working with a few clients, especially when you're just starting out, and this isn't for everybody, but for most of the time, you're still kind of making things up as you go. You're still kind of putting together your frameworks. You're still kind of flexing your mental muscles sort of thing. And I had a client, and this was 4 years ago, right when we started in 2020, when we started my old agency in 2020, and he pulled me aside and he said, man, like, you are so personable, but you are really unsure when you're giving, like, my top leaders. So they had like the VPs and executives in his company. You're really unsure when you're correcting them. Like, you almost like shrink. And he could, speaking to our point earlier, when we're communicating, he could see me kind of shrink a little bit. Because that is something that I've struggled with, was imposter syndrome. And he was like, these guys look up to you. You know that, right? And there's like, these are like 50, 60-year-old, like, they've been executives for a long time. They're successful individuals. And I was a professional athlete previously, right? So and then I ran small boutique gyms. So I didn't really, at the time, see myself like that. And he's like, these guys respect me so much. Like, why do you shrink? Like, you start the conversation, they think you're 100 feet tall, and then by the end of it, you're acting like you're 4 feet tall. Like, you should be 200 feet tall by the time you're done talking, right? So that was probably the biggest help I've gotten, was just, again, it was from a client too. So it was so cool that he believed in me enough, and I was having enough of a positive effect where he took me aside and kind of, he's like, he was my mentor all of a sudden at that point. But yeah, he's like, these people respect what you're saying. So stand 200 feet tall. Perfect. Right. And don't shrink. So that was probably, yeah.
And that's such a good thing to learn, because sometimes we don't realize how we're perceived. So kudos to your client, mm-hmm. especially. So yeah. Excellent. Mm-hmm. What's the one thing that you have to do every day? You're non-negotiable.
Ooh, I call it the 20-mile march. I like that. So one thing I have to do every day is we take the dogs, all four. We have 4 dogs. We have to take the dogs for a walk in a park called Cedar Glades Park. It is very secluded, and there's a little river that we can walk down to, but that is how I have to start my day. That is the thing that I have to do, is take the dogs for that walk.
Nice. Now, you said you'd read a lot of business books, but which is your favorite and why?
For some reason, I knew you were going to ask me this one. That is hard. And I've been asked that a lot. And every time I probably say a different book. But for me personally, it's been probably Beyond Entrepreneurship 2.0 by Jim Collins and Bill Lazar. Fantastic book on what makes big companies and what can make smaller SMEs successful long term. It's very, very, very structured on setting foundations. Now, if you're a coach listening to this and you want a suggestion on a book, The Motive would be a great one to start with by Patrick Lencioni. It's written as a story, and it's very good at kind of illuminating why being really, really clear on the type of business owner, on the type of coach, on the type of person, on the type of business you want to run. The importance of being really, really clear on that. And it does it in a really cool way. It's a very easy read.
Fantastic. I always love that question because it doesn't seem to matter who you ask. Everybody's got a different favorite. So we've got so many different books we can tap into. And the last one is what do you wish you had known when you started out?
Oh my God. If I was to pick one thing I wish I would have known, probably that I don't know anything. Probably that my cup will never be full. Other than that, it would probably have to be fail. Just try stuff. And that was one thing. That's one thing that holds people back. They want the next thing they do to be perfect, and they want it to be the thing that's going to make them a millionaire. They want it to be the thing that's going to make all the difference. It's probably not, unless you've been doing it for 15, 20 years. It's probably not. So just go try stuff. Like, be okay. Can I swear on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just be shitty. Be okay with being shitty. That's probably the thing I wish I learned or I knew when I was starting out. Just be okay being shitty at stuff. Because then if you're shitty long enough, you're eventually going to be pretty good at it. And then you keep going at it, you're going to be really good at it. But you got to be shitty first.
Fantastic. And I think that's a really great way to end the podcast. So Zach, thank you very much for your time. And if people would like to know more about you or contact you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to scngetstarted.com. You'll see us there. You can book a call there. Have a chat, no obligation. We just like to talk to people, to be honest. Or you can go on LinkedIn, Zach Carlin on LinkedIn, ZACHCARLIN, or Summit Chasers Network on LinkedIn as well. Or you can find us on our YouTube channel. We're really trying to get a lot of traction on our YouTube channel. We're putting some pretty cool content out there, and that's Summit Chasers Productions on YouTube.
Fantastic. And we'll put that in the show notes for people to find. So thank you very much, Zach.
Thank you. It was an absolute blast.
And SBT audience, remember, enjoy your journey. Hey, did you enjoy this podcast? Why don't you go and check out the Coach's Marketing Roadmap, your step-by-step guide to accelerate your journey to a thriving coaching business. The Coaches Marketing Roadmap.com.au. And don't forget to subscribe to Small Business Talk for Coaches podcast. Go to smallbusinesstalk.com.au for all the show notes from this episode. Remember, coaches, to be great, you must start. Pick one tip from today's episode. Take action and implement it. Coaches, you've got this. Let's meet again next week at the same time and place. Remember, just start. One step at a time, take consistent action, and enjoy your journey.